I'm just not sure if mine works, so I'm going to do both, and if this works, then we won't have to use yours again. But I figured. Okay, good evening. Okay, so we're going to discuss a topic today. It's really an extension from last week's topic. Maybe not an extension as much as it is something that naturally comes out. It's not necessarily connected, but it's all within the same sugya. And just like last week, the question and answer are very, very straightforward, but the sugya is what's a little more important. And it also has ramifications more than just the exact question itself. So just to begin, at the end of the year 1905, there was a young man from Brisk who was drafted into the Russian army, into Tsar Nikolai's army. This young man was not a religious Jew at all, and he wasn't just not religious, he was very antagonistic towards religion. He was what we would refer to as a mumar. How would you translate a mumar? I just looked it up in our school literally 2 minutes ago. They translated it as a renegade, someone who rebels against the mitzvos. So someone who rebels against the mitzvos, there are different categories which we'll discuss Blina there in a few minutes. But this young man was what we'll call a mumar. Again, someone who rebels against the mitzvos. He was a very significant mumar, enough that not only didn't he want to keep the Torah, but he would wait until every Shabbos morning, he would wait right outside of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's house. As soon as Reb Chaim Soloveitchik would come out of his house on Shabbos morning, he would light up a cigarette and smoke right in front of him just to show him. So that was the type of person he was. Anyways, this young man who was drafted into the army, and one day he's sitting around with his comrades in, I don't know, the local bar or whatever, and something just comes upon him, and he aims his rifle at a picture of the Tsar, and he shoots. So if anyone knows anything about Russian history, that's not the best idea. And one of his comrades ended up telling the mayor Brisk, and they put him on trial, and then he was sentenced to be killed, executed by a firing squad. The sentencing was 2 days after Rosh Hashanah, and the execution date was meant to be on Erev Yom Kippur, I believe. I take that back, Erev Sukkot. Not Erev Yom Kippur, Erev Sukkot. It was a pretty long time. Anyways, the mother of this young man goes to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik and asks if there's anything he can do to help. If anyone knows anything about Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, especially in his years in Brisk, Reb Chaim was known as an unparalleled Baal Chesed. He would do anything for anyone. So immediately he said, absolutely, I'll do anything to help. Many of those close around Reb Chaim at that point grew very nervous and said, maybe this isn't the best case to take on, because again, in Russia during that time period, it may look like you're, you know, on the side of a rebellion against the Tsar, and it may end up looking bad for you. Reb Chaim's response to that was, Ein Safik Motzi Midei Vadai, that this person, this young man, is bevadai going to be killed. The fact that there may be some sakana for me, it's a suffik, so the suffik doesn't beat out the vadai. Okay, anyways, a day or two later, word gets to Reb Chaim some way that the mayor of Brisk was willing to let the young man go free on two conditions. Firstly, if he's let free, then he has to go leave town. He can't come back to Brisk ever again. And number two, the second condition was that somehow, some way, 5,000 rubles should end up in the mayor's pocket. Again, something that was not uncommon for the time. When Reb Chaim hears this, he immediately calls a meeting with all the community leaders, and he tells the community leaders what happened, and that we have to raise this 5,000 rubles, and if you can't raise it from your constituents, from your members, from your congregants, whatever it was, then you yourselves are going to have to give towards the cause until we raise the 5,000 rubles. Most of the leaders, the rabbanim there, were very, very uncomfortable with the situation. And one of the main reasons they were uncomfortable with the situation was the following. And we'll get to the end of the story eventually, but this is kind of what leads into our sugya. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Chavav Amud Aleph, last week we discussed also the Gemara in Chavav a little earlier, but the Gemara here towards the end of Chavav Amud Aleph up until Chavav Amud Beis tells us that Mumarim, along with other people, again, those who are renegades, rebellious, such as this young man, so those people are what we would call Moridin Vilomalin. The Gemara tells us that those people, if theoretically, if there's an opportunity to put them into a pit, then you would throw them into a pit. We're going to leave that aside for now, but more importantly, Vilomalin. You don't raise them up from a pit, meaning if you have a Mumar, a rebellious person or renegade, I don't know which way to translate it, but if they're in the bottom of a big pit and they can't get out and they're dying, lo malin, we don't raise them up. Again, the assumption is that uvi'arta hara mikirbecha, that they are terrible, they do a terrible injustice for the world at large, and somehow or another, the world would be better without them. Okay, that's a hashkafic topic, not for now. But that's the halacha, and when it comes to mumar, lo malin, we don't raise them up. The Gemara continues, and I'll read, Amarli, anishona l'chol avidas achicha l'rabos es amumar. So the Gemara continues, and the Gemara says, so firstly, even before we get to the continuation of the Gemara, so this is what was troubling these leaders and these rabbanim. They said to Reb Chaim, how is it possible that you're running around to say that you know this person's a mumar? You know that he's specifically rebelling against you, against the mitzvahs, against God. The Torah tells us not, the halacha tells us we're not allowed to save him. And yet you're making us raise all this 5,000 rubles for him to be saved. So what's important is to figure out exactly what the prohibition is, and really figure out, therefore, what's actually mutter within the prohibition. So that's what we're going to, the journey of the next, you know, 40 minutes or so, 38 minutes, is going to be to figure that out. So the Gemara tells us, Amar le'ani shone l'chol avedas achicha l'rabos es hamumar. The Gemara continues, and the Gemara says, we have a pasuk by Hashavas Aveda, that you have to return the Aveda of your brother, of achicha, l'rabos es hamumar, and this includes even a mumar. So even if a mumar would lose a lost object, you have to return the lost object to that mumar. Even, therefore, the mumar is considered achicha. He's considered part of your brethren, part of your brothers. The Gemara ends up concluding, I'm not going to read the rest of the Gemara, but the Gemara ends up concluding that there is a difference between what we call a mumar l'tayavon and a mumar l'hachis. To simply put it, a mumar l'tayavon is what drives this renegade, this rebellion is just out of desire. The person enjoys, you know, eating trefos, he enjoys eating pork. Versus a mumar l'hachis is someone who doesn't do it because he enjoys. He does it because he wants to anger God, he wants to rebel against God, he wants to throw away the yoke of mitzvos. That's the distinction the Gemara seems to make, and that's how Tosos understand the Gemara, that the halacha that says, ein malin lo malin, we don't raise up, we don't save a mumar, that only applies to a mumar lehaches. When a mumar is trying to do something specifically to agitate us, to agitate God, not because he desires it, he just wants to get rid of the religion in general, then we wouldn't save such a person. However, a mumar l'tayavon, a mumar that just does things out of desire, we would save that person. So therefore, in terms of, let's say, the pasuk says, l'chol avedas achicha, by Hashavas Aveda. You have to return the lost object to all achicha. So the Gemara, and this is the way Tosos understand, the Gemara tells us, achicha is only a mumar l'tayavon, only when it's driven by desire, not when it's driven l'haches, to anger God, God and his mitzvos. Tosos conclude, there on the daf, l'chol avedas achicha doesn't just include lost objects, but even avedas gufo, even the person's body, there's a chiv in general that you have to return his body. That's part of one of the mitzvos of doctors, is they would have to, by healing someone, you're being mekayim the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, Hashavas Gufo. So that's why Tosos explained that's the connection to our Gemara. Lo malin, generally, we're not allowed to save a mumar. A mumar l'tayavon is considered achicha, and therefore we can return his body, we can save him. A mumar l'hachis, we cannot. A very seemingly simple distinction that Tosos bring up. So, just as an aside, there's a big, big discussion. The Stechemet has a large discussion in Ma'arechas HaMem, in Os Pei Zayin. He discusses how many times it takes for you to become a mumar. Right? If I eat, Chas V'Shalom, if someone else eats pig once, are they considered a mumar? So, presumably not, but there's a big discussion. One times, three times, the Shach at the beginning of Yoredeh and Simen Beis, that's where a lot of discussion about mumar comes up in Yoredeh Simen Beis. So the Shach has a big discussion about this. Whatever it is, it's kind of irrelevant to us at this point. But what is clear is that, again, there's a distinction between a mumar l'tayavon and a mumar l'haches. That is clear. The Rambam seems to disagree with Tosos, and the Rambam seems to broaden the Isser. Again, there's an Isser the Gemara presents us with, that you're not allowed to save a mumar. Tosos said the distinction from the Gemara is very clear. You're only not allowed to save a mumar l'haches. You're allowed to save a mumar l'tayavon. The Rambam comes, and the Rambam tells us in the fourth parak of Hilchos Tzeach, Halacha, Yud Dalid, Yud Beis, tells us that even within Mumar Leteyavon, there are times where you're also not allowed to save that person. What's an example? So the Rambam explains, someone who's Omid Berisho Vishona Batamid. It's something along those lines, that's the Lashon he uses. Omid Berisho Vishona Batamid. If a person desires whatever the Isser is, and that's why he constantly does that Isser. Constantly does it, that he's Omid Berisho, he's standing in his wickedness, Vishona Batamid, and he's constantly doing it. That's called a Mumar L'Tayavon, but that person, the Rambam tells us, is someone that we would also, Lomalin, that we would not save. So not only is it a Mumar L'Haches now even a type of Mumar L'Tayavon, someone who's Omid Berisho, that he's just standing in his wickedness, that's also someone who wouldn't be included in Achicha, and therefore wouldn't be included in Avedas Achicha, so you don't return the lost objects to him. Also, his guf, his Avedas Gufo, you wouldn't necessarily heal that person. So, the Chassam Sofer discusses, it's kind of aga. The Chassam Sofer has a tshuva about this topic a little bit, in Chelak Vav, in Simen Samech Zayin. So he discusses the topic, and when he quotes the Rambam, he says, you see from the Rambam, this is just, we pointed this out before, that when the Rambam is not telling us that to be a Mumar is one time, and then to be this like Shoneh Batam, and you're always doing it, that's three times. What the Rambam is really telling us is that to be a Mumar, you need to do something at least three times. That then will give you the title of a Mumar, you're a real renegade. And then the Rambam's telling us a new din. What he terms, a lot of the Achronim term, Mushrash Bechet. You're like Mushrash from Shoresh. Chet is so rooted in you. It envelops you. The way the Chassam Sofer understands it, and this may be an extreme way, but he understands it, De'ikr chiyuso u'michiyaso mimenu v'avik beitfei. That's how he understands that language in the Rambam. That's his whole like sustenance, is with these Yisurim. So that Mushrash b'chei, that's Lomal, and that's like a new separate din, that's separate from just doing three. Right, there's a unique thing when chait is who you are. The way the Chassam Sofer understands it, it's hard to think of an example of someone like that. So the only thing I was able to think about, and this is, it's crude, I guess, to say in a shul, but a zona. So that's someone whose ikr chiyuso is from the sin. You constantly are involved in it, and that's where your whole sustenance comes from. Mechiyuso, that's where it comes from. So anyways, and what comes out of the Rambam, again, unlike Tosfos, right? The Rambam tells us when the Torah, when the Halacha tells us, Lo Malin by a Mumar, you're not allowed to save a Mumar. That's by, number one, a Mumar Lahaches, a renegade who does things just to anger God. And number two, it applies even by a Mumar L'Tayavon if that's his whole life. He's Mushrash Bechet, Chet envelops him, Chet identifies him. But if you're a Mumar L'Tayavon, if you just, you know, have a desire every once in a while to eat pork, so you're not trusted for Kashrus, but we don't say lo malam, we don't say that we don't save that person. It happens to be, what's important just to figure out for the Rambam is, okay, so that's Mumar L'Tayavon, what's a Mumar L'Haches for the Rambam? So the Rambam discusses it a little bit in Hilchos Teshuvah, Perek Gimel, Halacha Tes. So the Rambam there basically says, what a Mumar L'Haches is if a person either does one Avera or all Averos in a way where he makes it as if there is no mitzvah or mitzvos. That's what a Mumar L'Haches is. You kind of just throw away religion. So Mumar L'Tayavon, he's not throwing away religion. He knows he's not supposed to eat pork. He just wants to. A Mumar L'Haches is someone who just wants to get rid of religion in general. Okay, but that's an aside. What comes out of our discussion is, or what's important for us, is that the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, in Simen Kuf Nun Ches, Seif Aleph, Paskins like this Rambam. Again, which means we're a little more machmir, to say that we don't just not save a Mumar L'Haches, but even a Mumar L'Tayavon who's Mushrash Bechet, who's so involved in sin. So obviously, what comes out for us, what's obviously important, is as, you know, when you go into medicine, when you're a doctor or any healthcare hero, as we like to call them, anyone who's, so the question is, are you allowed to heal in general? Are you allowed to go, if your patient's a Mumar, are you allowed to heal them? So you'll tell me most aren't a Mumar L'Haches. Some maybe, but most aren't. Maybe, maybe not, I don't know. But there are plenty of Mumarim that you would call Mushrash Bechet, that are just so, anytime they have a sin, an opportunity to sin, they would sin. So presumably there is such a concept, and the question is, you're obviously, right, the end of the discussion is you're allowed to, right, we all do it, I'm not a doctor, but all doctors do it. So the question is how and why is that allowed? Again, this was the hesitancy that all those community leaders told Reb Chaim. How are you running to go save this Mumar? He's a Mumar L'Haches. It's clear from whether you hold like the Rambam, whether you hold like Tosfos, and we hold like the Rambam. But even if you don't, even if you hold like Tosfos, Mumar Lachas, you're not allowed to save. So where does that come from? Even if you want to tell me, no, most of them aren't Mushrash Bechet. Most of them aren't that they're not so like entrenched in sin the way that some people are. Most Mumarim are okay. They do things here and there. Doesn't really define them. The problem is the Gemara in Chulin and Daf Hey tells us that aside from other Mumarim, someone who's Mechalal Shabbos Bifarhesia and someone who's Oved Avodah Zarah, so they're considered a guy. They're considered, you know, for all intents and purposes in terms of our situation, they're like a Mumar Lahachis. So even if you're not a Mumar Lahachis, right, if you're Mechalal Shabbos Bifarhesia, that's also turns you into a guy. So the Prima Gadim tells us in Aruch Chaim and Siman Shin Chaf Ches and Sifka and Vav, and I'll read it. Pshita li mumar lechal Shabbos b'farhesia, o mumar lahaches ledavar echad. So just like a mumar lahaches, so too a mumar, someone who constantly violates Shabbos b'farhesia, ein mechalin alav es haShabbos. We are mechal Shabbos, and the Mishnah Berura here writes the same thing in Sifka and Tess. He quotes from the Prima Gadim that most mumarim are, right? Any patient you'll see who's a mumar in the hospital, presumably doesn't keep Shabbos b'farhesia. So even if he's not doing a lahaches, and even if it doesn't define who he is, if he doesn't keep Shabbos, that's part of the same category. So now we're kind of really stuck, and especially in the story that we said before, right? What made this person, what, you know, kind of the identified this young man as a mumar was that he would dafka light a cigarette in front of Reb Chaim on Shabbos. So he was a mechal Shabbos b'farhesia. So he was, for all intents and purposes, in terms of Elcha Shechita, and Yoradei and Siman Beis, he's considered a guy. So as the Prima Gadim just told us, he can't be mechal Shabbos for him. Right, so on Shabbos, you go into the hospital to see your patients. Really, anyone who's identified as a mumar, you're not allowed to be mechal Shabbos. You're not allowed to save them. Yeah.
So, I was wondering when Mishnayos of the Zara, they bring down, the modern Mefarshim bring down that, like, we don't really say there are people who are
over the Mefarshim. Yeah, so we'll get there. Oh, yeah, sorry. So what they're quoting from Tosos, for Tosos on the first Daf of Avodah Zarah, there Rabbi Zalman Aleph has a long discussion about this, about the status of people nowadays in terms of Ovdei Avodah Zarah.
Right.
But regardless, someone who's Mechal Shabbos is not an Ovdei Avodah Zarah.
If you say it's the same thing, like, if their parents think you're Shabbos, they're like...
Okay, so we'll get there. That's where I thought you were going. Blin Eder, we'll get there in a few minutes. Blin Eder, I'll try to. So these dinim all come up again, the Shulchan Aruch and Yoradei and Siman Beis, especially this din, that a Mechal Shabbos is considered a guy. So therefore, to save a Mumar L'Teyavon seems to not be an issue at all. So if you go into the hospital on Shabbos and your patient is a Mumar L'Teyavon, somehow you know that, there's no halachic question. The question is, if you're a Mumar L'Hachas, if you're a Mumar L'Teyavon who's what we call Mushrash Bechet, who's just always living that life of sin. And third category now would be Mechalei Shabbos and Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Now, as Aviel points out, Ovdei Avodah Zarah is a little trickier. We pointed this out before also, but at least Mechalei Shabbos Farhesia would also be an issue. So just to start with Mechalei Shabbos Farhesia. So there are a couple of heterin that the poskim give for that reason. So firstly, the Maram Shik writes in his Chuvas and Aruch Chaim and Siman Kuf Mem. Again, Maram Shik was in the 19th century. So he was a big Talmud of the Chassam Sofer. He considered himself a very, very big Talmud of the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer had a lot of good things to say about it. Anyway, so he wrote that you're able to be Mechal Shabbos for a Chole who is a Mumar, because Ein L'dayan El Masha'ein of Ros, as the Gemara tells us, a judge only has his eyesight. He sees what it is. And he says, so if it looks like he's being Maharher B'tshuva, if it looks like he's thinking he's doing Tshuva, so we don't assume that he's a real mumar in that sense, and you can save him. And he's somich on his rebbe, on the Chassam Sofer and Tshuva and Yoradei and Shin Mem Aleph. The Chassam Sofer has a long discussion that maybe there's a svek sveka in such a case. Okay, that's an interesting, you know, point to make.
Do you need evidence that he's from Herbert?
Yeah. So
just saying, like, oh, maybe he's
from. Good. So to elaborate on the point, maybe again, the Chassam Sofer and his Tshuva discusses maybe not, but to elaborate on the point even further. So there's another Tshuva, the Chalkas Yaakov, Rav Yaakov Breish has. He was in the 19th, really, most of the 20th century. He survived the war by fleeing to Zurich, I think, is where he ended up staying. So his Jews, Chalkas Yaakov, are very important Jews that we have. So he writes in his Truvas in Chelak Aleph in Simon Mem Hey, also he's Mekel for Mechalalei Shabbos Bifar Hesya, and he gives a few reasons. But the first reason, similar to what we just quoted from the Maram Shik, he writes that by Pikuach Nefesh in general, we have a concept. The Pasuk tells us, V'hitzilu Ha'eda, that whatever we can, we always try to save a soul. Right? That's just the rule. Even if it's just a suffix, even if there's a rove against, we always say, no, we can't kill unless really we're Vadai. Right, that's generally the rule. So the Chagas Yaakov says, okay, so here, there's a possibility that he did tshuva. There's a suffix, and he says, not only that there's an umdana, this is the way he writes, there's an umdana, because he's sitting on Eretz Divide, that he's sitting on his deathbed. So how could he not do tshuva? So it's a very interesting thing to think about. I don't know if, growing up not religious, I'm not sure anyone who on their deathbed is I think this may apply to people who... You know what we call... What? Yeah, exactly. So in that sense, yes. But I don't think, the atheist is saying, I'm sorry that I violated Shabbos. I think maybe he's saying, maybe I should believe in God a little more. But and I think it may... For people who grew up religious and then they, as they say, went off the derech, chas v'shalom. So in those situations, it would make sense why this would be an umdana. But it's harder to say that this is such an umdana. For other people. But okay, anyway, that's one thing. He ends up giving four more, what he calls sniffim, four more, branches, reasons why we can be mekel by mechalalei Shabbos b'far hesya. It sounds like he doesn't think any one of these would work, but just as a conglomeration of all of them, he does think it works. And I'll tell you what they are. So firstly, again, he says we can assume that he did tshuva, because there's at least a safik he did tshuva, and he's on his deathbed. Again, I would assume he's a chol sheyesh bo sakana. So... For all those reasons, we would not, we would save him. We would return to be achicha, part of our brethren. Number two, he quotes the Das HaItter. The Itter is brought down in Rabbi Kivi Eger in Yardan Simon Beis by all these things that I was quoting before. So Rabbi Kivi Eger quotes this Itter, that the Itter writes that when we talk about this concept, this category of Mechalalei Shabbos B'var Hesya, that only applies to people who are oved avodas hakarka. That only applies to people who are, working the ground, literally. But just because you drive every Shabbos, that doesn't make you the halacha category of Mechalalei Shabbos B'far Hesya to turn you into a mumar, to turn you into a nachri. Where does that come from? Where does that come from? Okay, that's a discussion for the Itter. We just don't have the time to go in there. That's sniff number two. Sniff number three, he says, that there are those, the Mishnah Berurah actually brings this down in Orach Chaim and Siman Shin Pei Hei, but there are those that say that this category of Mechalalei Shabbos B'far Hesya doesn't apply if the person who's being Mechalal Shabbos would be embarrassed to do what he's doing in front of an Adam Gadol. So if he's in front of a big tzaddik, he would never, text on his phone on Shabbos. So if that's true, then suddenly, even though they're B'far Hesya, they're not considered Mechalalei Shabbos B'far Hesya anymore. Okay, that's number three. Number four, he says that... that some of the Achronim write that this whole concept that a Mechal Shabbos B'far Hesya is Dino Ka'akum, that those who are Mechal Shabbos publicly, that they're considered a non-Jew, that's only Midrabanan. It's not even Midrais in the first place. That's the fourth. And then the fifth sniff, Lahakel, is that there are those that say that if you don't know the significance and the severity of an Isser on Shabbos, if you don't realize how severe violating Shabbos truly is, you're not part of this category of Mechal Shabbos B'far Hesya, that Dino Ka'akum, that it's like you're a non-Jew. So again, all of those, we wouldn't take them singularly. But for all five of those snifim, he says we can put them all together. Again, maybe it's Rabbanan, there's a suffix whether he did tshuva, there's a suffix whether even someone who's not Oved Karka is considered a Mechal Shabbos B'far Hesya, Dino Ka'akum. That there are those that say it doesn't apply if you're going to be embarrassed in front of an Adam Gadol. And lastly, if you don't know the significance of the Isser. So all those reasons were mekel by Mechalalei Shabbos. So lemaisa, the poskim are mekel that if you have someone who's a mumar, who's Mechalalei Shabbos B'far Hesya, or not a mumar, I mean he is in this case, but someone who is Mechalalei Shabbos B'far Hesya, it's mutter to be matil, he's called achicha, and it's mutter to save his life. So now we solve the category of Mechalalei Shabbos B'far Hesya. But again, as we pointed out, that doctors deal with a lot more patients than just Mechalalei Shabbos B'far Hesya, those who violate, transgress Shabbos publicly. We also deal with patients that are just mumarim, that just live life of sin. And for those patients, we don't necessarily have the same reason. So One of the major reasons, or I would say really the major reason, and this is something Aviel alluded to before, is what people generally quote is from the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish, I'll read you a few lines of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish, as we'll see, didn't necessarily make this concept up. He got it from before him, which is important because a lot of times people think, you know, later authorities. The Chazon Ish lived in the 20th century. So sometimes people think when a later authority says something, like he's making it up out of nowhere. But it's important to realize that he's coming from somewhere and he has a large basis for what he's saying. But the Chazon Ish writes that the whole concept that we don't save mumarim, that if they fell in a big pit, you wouldn't save them, that only applies bizman she'ashkachas Hashem geluyo lakol, when the divine providence is revealed to everyone. Because at that point, says the Chazon Ish, that the ridding our world of Rishayim, of evil people, is something that's self-evident to everyone. Once everyone sees the divine providence, so people are going to understand why wicked people bring peronios, bring bad things to this world. And because of that, getting rid of those people makes sense to everyone. However, bizman ha'helam kemo hayom, she'ashkachas Hashem eina gluya, this comes up, the Chazon Ish writes in Yoredeh and Simin Yud Gimel, Sivka and Tazayin. When the Hashkacha, when the divine providence of Hashem is not revealed to everyone, ein b'masa horada geder pirtza. So, you know, putting him in a hole or not picking him up from a hole doesn't solve any problem in terms of people seeing God. If anything, says the Chazon Ish, if you don't save the person, it's going to cause a greater problem because people are going to look at the Jews as immoral people now. And it's going to look bad for us. So this whole concept, he says, doesn't exist because of that, because the Hashgacha of Hashem, because divine providence is not, you know, within us, is not within our range. And he says, Lachin, Ein adin shel morid noagim bizman hazeh, we don't lower them down in a big pit nowadays. Ela aleinu l'hachziram ba'avosos ahava. It's on us to reel them back in with, you know, ropes of love. Ulhamidam b'keren ora b'mashi adin magas. And to stand them up with a shining light as much as we possibly can, meaning that's our job. This concept comes up. I mentioned he's not the first one to say it. I found the Rambam in the Perashah Mishnayis in Maseches Chulin Perek Aleph Mishnah Beis writes something very similar, and I'll quote it in a second. I'm going to quote it in 1 second, but it happens to be so. This concept was one of the kulas that Reb Chaim responded. The first thing he responded to these lay leaders is, again, you're telling me I can't save this young man who's about to be killed because he's a mumar. So that doesn't apply nowadays, doesn't apply especially when the Sanhedrin's not around. That's number one. Number two, the Chazon Ish continues, and he writes, this is in Os Chaf Ches, and that's Simen Yud Gimel, same place. And nowadays, since most of the Jews, or most Jews in general, are not raised properly, most Jews are not religious. They grow up not religious. They don't know any better. So they're what's called, and this is exactly what Aviel was saying, they're called Tinok Shenishba. That they're not considered as if they grew up. They're considered as if they're captured amongst the Goyim, and therefore they're called Anusim. It's beyond their control to know anything. And once that's true, he writes, V'af l'chalalov as HaShabbos b'shvil HaTzalaso, we are even mechalal Shabbos to save them. So these people are called Achicha, they're called our brethren because they're a Tinok Shenishba. Because it's an onus, it's totally out of their control, it's as if they were captured amongst the Gaim, they don't know any better, therefore we're chayiv to be matzil them, we're chayiv to save them. This, as I pointed out before, comes from the Rambam in the Perashah Mishnayis and Chulin Perek Aleph Halacha Beis. He doesn't write this, but it seems to. The Rambam writes there, and I'll read, again, this is a translation because Perashah Mishnayis is written in Arabic. Aval Elu Asher Noldu Bideos Elu. Those that were born with that those temperaments, meaning the temperaments of the Goyim, they don't know any better. V'chonchu al pi'en, and they were raised by their morals, with their morals, with their ideals. Harehim ka'anusim. So those are considered people, those people are considered anusim, they're pater from it, we don't know any better. V'dinam din tinok shenishba l'bin ha'goyim, and they're considered a tinok shenishba. Shekol avirosav shegaga. That all their averos are considered shkaga, kmo shebeyarnu. Aval hamaschil harishon hu mezid v'lo shogeg. The Rambam continues though and says, but the person who started it all, the person who started the conversation to convince everyone to leave, that person's going to be a mezid. There's one person he I don't know if he's explicitly referring to, but he's only implicitly referring to someone who may have started a different religion, possibly. But that person he says is a mezid. But all the other people, they're anusim. They don't know any better. They were just raised in that way, in that shape. So because of that, again, the Chazon Ish, and this is, as we just said, is within the Rambam also, says anyone who's a mumar is just a tinok shenishba, or I should say it this way. Those that are mumar that aren't religious, at least, are definitely just a tinok shenishba. They're part of Achicha, they're part of our brethren, and therefore we're chayiv to save them, we're chayiv to bring them up from the pit. It happens to be, there's a Shitu Mikubetzas at the end of Bava Kama on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, quotes from a Me'iri. And this is really an additional reason to what we just said in the Chazon Ish. And the Me'iri basically says that apikorsim, and I'm going to read it to you, udvar melu, kulam tzrichel naharbos ba'omdos, v'sheyu mozne ha'iyan mechu venes bahen. All these people, let's just call them the mumarim that we're talking about, these renegades, all these people need a tremendous amount of assessment, and mozne iyan mechu venes, the scales of intense iyan, depth, but he means a serious deliberation is really what he's saying. A tremendous, tremendous amount of serious deliberation. Biyad chachamim gidolim menachonei mada, amongst the wisest people that we have. And it, only in that way, when there's that deliberation amongst these great wise people, then they can say, okay, this person really deserves, we should let him die. But other than that, even Bizman Sanhedrin, says the Me'iri, according to Shita Megubet, says, even back then we still wouldn't do it. And the reason is, because what the Me'iri is telling us, is that the reason why we wouldn't save such a person, is because, again, of the pirtza that they cause. They're causing such a problem in our communities to have them around. And Reb Chaim quoted the Shita Megubetzas as one of his proofs. And Reb Chaim said, the world, especially Russia, is full of Bundists at that point, full of people who are apikorsim. So what, not saving one person is going to make such a difference? That's not such a hurrah shah at that point. So because of that, we don't have the wise people deliberating on whether it should be done, and it doesn't make sense to do it in such a scenario. The Shita Megubetzas there, according to the Me'iri, ends off saying the following. Ulaolam al yehu regalav shel adam kalos l'shvichas damim. A person's legs should never be, you know, easy, light, for shvichas damim. Meaning, what the Me'iri is telling us is, yeah, there's a halacha. Moridin v'lomalin. You're right, we would let a person die halachically if they're a mumar l'haches. But even in such a situation, it should not be easy for you. It's still shvichas damim. It's very similar to on Shabbos when we heard Ashira, for those who were here. We heard a share on abortion. So one of the things the rabbi was saying was that, you know, there are situations where he'll get a shayla, and he believes that there's a kula, and he knows that the person he's going to ask is going to be mekel, but he'll still ask a shayla because he doesn't want to be that one responsible for that. Because, right, lo lama al yu regalav shaladam kalos l'shvichas damim. It's the very same idea. But it's just an important, maybe ashkafic point for this, but again, kind of irrelevant, but it is an important point nonetheless. What comes out, therefore, is in our situation, let's say if you're a doctor and you have patients, so really it would be split. So in a case of mumer l'haches, there's no question. Mumer l'teyavon completely, there's no question. You're obviously allowed to save them. In a case of a mumer l'haches, or a mumer l'teyavon, that's what we call mushrash b'chet, so entrenched in sin, in both of those cases, it would be mutter to save them. You would be allowed to save them, and you were, as the poskim say, you're commanded to save them. You're metuvim l'achayoso because they are part of achicha, because they are simply seen as a tinoko shenishbu, as people that were captured amongst the gayim. They're anusim. It was out of their control, and especially the Shita Megubetzas, that we didn't have the deliberation to allow us to let them die. So for all those reasons, that's really why we are what we'll call makel, but it's not really a kula. Now, it happens to be, just as an aside, last week we discussed at length that the Heter Eva by Goyim, that Shuvah there of Moshe and the Chassam Sofer that we rely on. So, L'chora, the Shulchan Aruch tells us here that this applies in this situation also, there in Yarden Kuf Nun Ches. The Ramah really says. There's a Heter Eva here, possibly. The Heter Eva is not so simple, though. You know, but by non-Jews, if the non-Jews see us doing something and we're treating them unfairly, so then the non-Jews say, the Jews are treating the non-Jews unfairly, so we'll treat all Jews unfairly. It's a little, I'm not saying it's not common or it can't happen, but there's a different discussion when we talk about irreligious Jews. Because especially if you're a tinok shenishba, you don't know any better. So you don't necessarily realize that, you know, the Jew is treating you any differently. And then if he does, you're not going to say, oh, yeah, we should treat all Jews badly because you are a Jew. So not that there isn't a Heter Eva, but there's a bit of a different thought process in terms of the Heter Eva when it comes to Mumarim when we talk about renegade Jews. But again, that is the Heter of, that's the Heter why doctors in general are allowed to save and help and treat patients who are Mumarim. Now, to end the story, I have two more points to make, but just to end the story, for Reb Chaim, so again, this young soldier who was meant to be executed 2 days before Sukkos, or Erev Sukkos, I don't remember the story. The story can be found in, there's a biography of the Brisker Rav, and of Reb Chaim, really. It's a four-part biography called Harav Mibrisk, by Rabbi something Meller, I think it was. It's also translated into English. But they have this story in that book, in the first chelek, in the Hebrew version at least. So the end of the story goes that he went to, they had a meeting, told them you need to, you know, gather the 5,000 rubles to pay the ransom or to bribe the mayor of Brisk to let this young soldier free. They ended up going out, whatever, at Kol Nidre, before Kol Nidre, after Mincha. So Reb Chaim got up in the shul and said that everyone, he didn't get the money yet, he said everyone has to go get the money, and Reb Chaim said, I'm not allowing the shul to begin Kol Nidre until we raise the 5,000 rubles. This was, again, after Mincha is the time for the Suda Mafsekes. So, one thing led to another, everyone rushed, they said, because they wanted to eat the Suda Mafsekes, they finally got Reb Chaim the money. When they got Reb Chaim the 5,000 rubles, he went to the mayor quickly to give those 5,000 rubles. And right after that, they went right to shul for Kol Nidre. They didn't even have a Suda Mafsekes that year because they couldn't, because they were too busy doing all this. So you see the extent to which Reb Chaim felt it was necessary at this point to save this Jew, because again, a mumar, we assume, is a Tinok Shenishba, the Bizman HaSanhedrin, whatever the reason is. There's a reason why not only are we Mekil, but there's a mitzvah to heal them, and they're considered like the rest of our Jewish brothers and sisters. There are two more, maybe short points, just to point out in terms of the sugya. The first is the following. The question arises in such a situation, and this is a question that arises in a lot of treatment plans by doctors. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Vav Amud Aleph, all the way to Vav Amud Beis, discusses the Isser Doreisa that we're all well aware of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol. That you're not allowed to place a stumbling block in front of a blind person, literally, meaning you're not allowed to help a person, cause a person to sin. The Gemara tells us the Isser D'oraisa of Lifnei Iver, of causing another to sin, only applies betray Avra Dinara. Only applies is it if the person receiving the help, who's going to sin, has no other way of receiving that help. So for example, the classic example the Gemara gives of Lifnei Iver is when you give a kosiyayin linazir. You give a cup of wine to a nazir. A nazir is an isser to drink wine. You're giving him a cup to drink wine. That's lifnei iver. Now, if it happens to be that he can get wine from anywhere on the block, so that's not lifnei iver d'oraisa, because he can get it from other places. However, the Rishonim discuss, and the Ritva says this explicitly, as the Tosos earlier, that even though, and the post can bring it down, even though there's no lifnei iver d'oraisa in such situations, there's still a concept called misayaya yidei over yaveira. Helping out those who are committing sins. The Ritva here on that sugya in Avodah Zarah, right at the beginning on Vav, writes and he explains using his words. Vizakolel the iser of misayaya to help someone who to violate an iser. Vizakolel kol shanu gormin lo laasos iser o laharbos be iser. Anything that we cause someone to do an iser or to increase in a specific iser, in a specific prohibition. So that's all misayel yidei over avera. So the question is, what about this case? You have a mumar. By healing him, you know he's going to go back to his lifestyle of sin. Or we can have a more direct case, because maybe you'll see that as a little more far-fetched. But just to give, a hot topic example. But let's say someone is a surgeon, and there has to do a, what's it called now? A gender confirmation? Is it still called that? I know they changed the name, I think. Gender affirmation. So gender affirmation surgery for transgenders. So the main discussion here is an Isser Chavala, which we'll discuss at a separate point, Blina, there in a different shir. But the question is, by the surgeon doing this surgery, So what you could possibly be doing is, let's say it's a man who wants to be a woman. So the man becomes a woman, and now the woman has a boyfriend, and the woman goes and lives with her boyfriend. So what you're doing is, by allowing her to be a girl in her head, now she says, I can live with a boy. Right? And obviously there are issues of Mishkav Zachar, etc. So is there, in these situations, as a doctor, and you can think of many situations, I'm sure. But that's the question. Is this considered Misayei Yedei Ovrei Avera? Is it considered as if you're helping someone with Averos? So, presumably it isn't. And that's because there's one big reason that's brought down by the poskim as to when Misayei Yedei Ovrei Avera applies. There's only really one case. And I'll give the example. It's really all the poskim quote from the Binyan Siyan. Anyone who wrote the Binyan Siyan? Binyan Siyan was written by Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, who wrote Darach Lener. What? Darach Lener. For some reason, the Binyan Siyan is always the one who I ask. Does anyone know who wrote it? Usually Aryeh is able to say, oh yeah, Darach Lener. He usually gets it. In the 19th century, Germany. He was So in his Tshuvos, in Siman Tes Vav, so he was asked by a Jew, obviously, I want to print a book, a Sefer. I want to give it to a non-Jewish publisher. So I want to give it to them to publish the book, but I know they have Jews working for them. I know they're going to work on Shabbos, or I think they're going to work on Shabbos. Am I still allowed to give it to that publishing company? That was what was asked of the Binyan Siyan. And the Binyan Siyan basically says, it's not a short tshuva, but he basically says, the only time Misayei Yedei Ovrei, Lifnei Iver doesn't apply, but he says the only time Misayei Yedei Ovrei Avera applies is when what you're doing is Bishas Maiseh HaIsser, is at the time of the Isser. If you're doing something and then someone else later decides that they're going to do whatever they want, that's not at the time of the Isser, and therefore there is no Isser of Misayei Yedei Ovrei Avera. Just to give two more examples that the poskim have, the Netziv has his tshuva in his tshuvas Meshav Davar in Chelek Beis and Siman Lamed Beis, where he was asked of a very, very interesting and important question. Someone asked if they're allowed to set up a couple to make a shidduch between two people that they know will not keep Taharas HaMishpacha. Is that considered Lifnei Iver? Let's leave that aside. It's not. What about Misayei Yedei Ovrei Avera? So the Netziv brings this Binyan Siyan, and he says, the Binyan Siyan says that as long as it's not B'shas Maisa HaYisr, that's not called Misayei Yedei Ovrei Avera. He doesn't conclude that. I'm not saying. What?
Does he give should you do it?
No, because he ends up saying, according to the Ran and the Rif, I think, and the Rambam, he thinks it would be Asr, maybe for a different reason. But he says, for many Rishon, it would be okay, especially according to this Binyan Siyan. But he brings this Binyan Siyan La'alacha. Maybe to give one more example. And the tshuvas of the Maharsham, again, that's a little later. That's closer to the end of the 19th century. I guess the same time as the Netziv, really. But he died in the early 20th century, the Maharsham, I think. Anyway, so in the tshuvas of the Maharsham in Chelek Beis and Siman Kuf Pei Dalid, he was asked if a Jew wanted to rent out their house or whatever building to another Jew who they knew was a barber. And he was going to give haircuts on Shabbos. He was going to be Mechal Shabbos for Hesia. Again, is it Lifnei Iver? No. Is it Misayei Yedei Ovrei Avera? And the answer was, again, he quoted the Binyan Siyan, and he quoted from the Ksav Sofer as well. That was who he, Maharsham, added. The Ksav Sofer says the same thing, that there's no Isser of Misayei when it's not at the moment of Isser, at the time of the prohibition. There happens to be a very, very interesting tshuva that Rav Moshe has, that's very similar to all of these in Yoradein, Chelek Aleph and Siman Ayin Beis, about renting out a hall. It was in London, renting out a hall where they knew there was going to be mixed dancing or something. So he has a whole tshuva about this as well. He has a couple more points to this. Either way, when it comes to our story, because of all these reasons, when the doctor, even when they're doing the gender affirmation surgery, but even if it's less direct, you're never doing something that at the time of Isser, you're allowing them to do an Isser. And because of that, Misayei Yedei Ovrei Avera does not apply. It happens to be, I asked Rav Shechter this, whether he thinks it would be Misayei Yedei Ovrei Avera. I asked him this, there are a few times I ask Rav Shechter questions, even, I know what the answer is going to be, I knew the answer was no, but I wanted to know why, I wanted to know if he would quote this Binyan Siyan, because then I know he holds like the Binyan Siyan. He kind of just chuckled at me, and his answer, which makes sense, he said no, because these are, as we mentioned before, based off the Chazon Ish and the other poskim, it's mutter to save this person. It's pikuach nefesh. Once it's pikuach nefesh and it's docha Shabbos, it's going to be doch any avira, especially a derabanan. So he didn't think Messiah applies in the first place. Very possibly true also. But those are two things. So just to end off, just one more minute. The last thing, just an interesting thing to think about, when you have a patient who's a mumar, a patient who's committing averos, so the question is, even though you're healing him, you have a mitzvah to heal him, presumably you would also have a mitzvah to reproach him, to give him tochacha. The Gemara tells us in two places really, in Avodah Zarah, in Yud Ches, and Shabbos, and in Dalet, that anyone who has biyada limchos velo michu, nispas ba'osa avon. That if you have the ability to protest someone doing an iser and you don't, you get swallowed up in that iser, in that avera. So in this case, if you don't protest, you're right, there's no misayaya. You're right, it's a mitzvah, but maybe you still have to protest if you have the ability, especially if you have more direct situations. So, for example, let's say you had a situation, just to use the example we had before, you have a zona. So the doctor who's with her is giving her, let's say, contraceptives. So he's really aiding her in her lifestyle. Again, we said that's still not a problem, that's not misayaya even. But that's, so in that situation, maybe he should say, yeah, I'm giving you this, but, this is not what you're allowed to do. Right? The Torah says you're not allowed to be this. You're not allowed to act this way. So are you chayif to say such a thing? So l'chora, the answer is no, and that's because the Ramban Yoredeya, in Simin Shin Lamed Dalet in Sif Mem Ches, he quotes this chazal and says, yeah, kol shebiyado limchos v'lo michu nisbas boso avon. If you have the ability to protest the given aveir and you don't, you're swallowed up within that iser. But the Ramban writes, however, you don't have to be mafsid mamon for protesting. You don't have to lose any mamon by protesting. So in a situation of doctors, I would imagine in probably 99.9% of the time, if you would say that to the patient, they would immediately go to your supervisor and say, this crazy doctor is telling me what I think. And especially in the world where we live in, where the patient has full autonomy and everything, so it would cause a lot of issues for your parnasa in your profession. So presumably for those reasons, unless you see that wouldn't happen, there's a lot to rely on, that you don't even have to give the mumar, you don't even have to give this renegade any tochacha. Okay, so that was just, just to quickly conclude, we started off asking whether you're allowed to heal a mumar, a renegade. The answer basically was yes, either because they're tinok shenishba, or because we don't apply the rule of malin nowadays. Even Michali Shabbos Varhesya would be mutter for all those reasons the Chalkas Yaakov gave. Now the question was, is there Messiah? We said no, because either it's not the time of the Isser, or because, as Rav Shechter pointed out, it's Pikuach Nefesh, it's Docha Shabbos, it's going to be Docha Messiah. And thirdly, you probably don't even have to give this Mumar Tochacha. Okay, everyone should have a great tonight.